Hello, and welcome to episode 184 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me is the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the jelly in our donut is, of course, Tony Esmond.
All right, bastards.
You're right, Tony.
Oh, dear. Tony's full of life this evening.
If you're signed up for the mailer this week, there's a big key change in Uncle Tony. Just watch this space. I want everyone to read it because it's now that I'm retired and I'm a pensioner, I can do what I fucking like.
Yeah. But what's your language, Tony?
Language.
Yeah. So the next few weeks are going to be a very interesting. In the world of the Awesome Comics Podcast and Tony Esmond. And the year of...
I've already told you, true believers, I'm going to wander down from my room in my, what I like to refer to as my night shorts and T-shirt.
Yeah. Night and, shorts? Oh, yep. That...
I can imagine you look a bit like the dude.
Have you seen my WhatsApp picture at the moment?
Is that the dude?
I'll invite you to go and have a look at my WhatsApp picture, and that is a literal comparison of me in my pants.
Oh, God. Right, I'm staying away from WhatsApp. You've put me off WhatsApp. I'm deleting it from my phone.
Dan can't help himself. I can hear him.
Yeah, of course he can't help himself. He's Dan Butcher.
It's Nick Cage.
Oh, slightly overweight with a beard and long hair in his pants. Yeah. And there's a little gappage in the side of those pants, isn't there? They're a little too small for him.
Oh my word. Yeah. From that sort of visual imagery to the Awesome Comics Podcast. Yeah.
From Tony's balls to Comic House. Here we go.
Oh yeah. Who are Comic House, Tony?
They're the Netflix for comics, like my balls are.
No. Look,
no, my balls are not. That's a lie.
I know you're essentially you're a pensioner and you're free and you're going to be running through fields of barley in nothing but a silky robe.
Secret fantasy of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's immediately outside Vince's house in the country.
I'm surrounded by fields of barley. Yeah.
Do you like the long running Vince is a country boy and we're city lads joke?
Yeah. It never gets old, does it?
Barley means something completely different in London.
Yeah. The truth is, Tony doesn't live in London.
No, I don't. I fucking live in the country as well. Yeah. And you know that because you've been to my house.
Don't spoil it. They all think this is real.
Occasionally, I put a picture of me walking a dog up online, and someone says, literally every time someone goes, I thought you lived in London.
Yeah.
No, I was born in London. Yeah. But I live kind of near London.
There is green bits in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are. Not, yeah.
Green bits near London, it's usually something that's gone mouldy.
Or drugs of some kind.
Yeah, drugs. No,
yeah.
But dead body. just the basement.
What do you mean by that? The downstairs?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, dear.
What's available on Comic House at the moment?
Yeah.
There's a whole slew of new titles. hashtag discover week. Indie comics.
Yeah. Oh, Dan.
Reese Finlay's The High Priestess, Chapter 1, A Night in the Life. We've got City of Lost Souls by James McCulloch, hopefully trying to snag him in for another guest spot, or a guest spot. That's issue 6. I think that's the last of the final chapter of that comic. Got Monsterella from Hangman Comics, Red Rocket comic by Matt Gutt. McGully and The Devil in Disguise, and the cherry on the cake is issue 2 of the Awesome Comics.
Yes.
By Dan Butcher and Tony Esmond.
Yeah.
So releasing issue 4 in a couple of weeks' time at Troops. So that's going to be fantastic.
All the printers.
A whole lot more.
So all of that is on comichouse.com. Now, comichouse.com, as you can tell, they're an indie comic marketplace. So there's a massive selection of titles on the database, most of which you can get on the app as well, if you like reading your comics digitally. And for that app, it's a subscription service. For only £3 a month, you get access to all of the books, including ours, and so many more amazing titles. You're about to hear a bit of talk about the pricing of comics.
Yeah.
And, that is a bargain, I think. And you can get a 14-day free trial and find out more about it at comichouse.com. And Pete and the Comic House guys, I'm so sorry, this week was an absolute mess.
I think they're used to it by now.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing he's going to be at Troops, isn't he? We're seeing him there.
Yeah.
Yes.
He can physically assault us there for our awful adverts.
Yep.
But I was going to always mention, like, if you've got a small press or indie comic, you should really consider uploading it to Comic House.
Definitely.
It turned, bigger than other digital platforms we talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of good way of getting your comic out there and around the world.
Yeah.
Very, very true. And there's a nice little community built up around Comic House as well. There's lots of nice reviews and stuff flying about on that, which is great. So obviously, we've got an exciting guest coming up for you in just a second. We want to just start seriously, we've had a good week scheduling this week. We've got the next few months sort of sewn up, and
got a few cracking guests.
We have some.
Up.
We have some cracking guests, as well as, like, we're going to do a couple of weeks. It's just us three. What are they? Are they the sort of? They're not the prizes. They're sort of booby prizes, aren't they?
Yeah.
We've got the week end of True Believers Comic Con. We'll be recording early, so it's hard to schedule any guests when it's like that. So
you don't know what you get with us. But we're going to endeavour to make 2019 the best year ever. And we're starting that with one hell of a guest. And you've heard us talk about Alterna Comics quite a bit over the past, over the past year. We've talked about it more and more, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
We were very lucky to talk to the founder and publisher, who's Peter Cimetti. So enough of this inane waffle. You want to hear the actual good stuff and talking about comics. So here's the interview for your listening pleasure. Okay, this week we're joined by a very special guest.
Yes.
And someone who has been championing independent and creator-owned comics for some time now. He's a founder and publisher of Alterna Comics, who have been talked about quite a few times on this show, haven't they?
Well, especially recently,
Yes, it's our pleasure to welcome Peter Cimetti to the show. Hello, Peter.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, man. Yeah.
This has been a long time coming. I think I keep hearing the name Alterna all the time, and recently I've just delved into their titles myself, which we'll probably get more into, because I know, Dan, you've got a little bit of a history with Alterna as well, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've mentioned Peter regarding we had the Stan Lee episode, and we were talking about who could we see kind of stepping into the role, and I put Peter forward because he's very kind of upbeat and a good champion and a voice for comics, which I think we do need right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think Alterna's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Good. Well, yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm not quite sure I could live up to that.
No. I don't think anyone can.
But it's already done, Peter. We voted you in.
Oh, it's too late. Oh well, I guess it is what it is then.
So obviously there's plenty to talk about, but just to get the ball rolling, tell us how sort of your love of comics started and how you got involved with them.
I've kind of always loved comics. I've been reading comics as long as I can possibly remember. I still have a couple from when I was a little kid. As far as making them goes, I kind of wanted to start making them when I was in high school, and then a lot of different things were going on in the industry at the time. I didn't think that I could actually get work in comics, so I started going more towards a graphic design road. But by the time I was out of college, it was just I had to make comics, and I didn't really want to be a part of another company. I didn't really want another company to have any control over my story or my characters. So even though there was Image and stuff like that out, there's a lot of different things at Image that it didn't really sit well with me. So I just kind of self-published. And I also thought, honestly, I wasn't really that ready yet to be at a bigger company. I just thought maybe if that happens down the line, it happens. But for now, I think the best route would be for me to just to feel it out and do my own thing. And over the course of time, making that book and selling my first one that I had just done a small print on demand run for, people were sending me messages and emails and things like that, really wanted to submit their work to Alterna, even though it was just really a self-publishing label at that point.
Yeah.
So in regards to choosing...
I saw a lot of talented people, so that's why we ended up going the way we went.
Cool.
So in regards to choosing titles for, say, someone submitted a comic, how would you go about judging whether it was something you'd be interested in publishing?
So when someone submits a story, it's always very difficult because of the fact that, you know, there's no rule book, there's no specific mathematical equation to determine what exactly not only is good, but what would sell.
It's very subjective, isn't it? Let's face it, a lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely in the first couple of years, a lot of the stuff I had accepted was stuff based on just complete, this looks okay to me and maybe we should go with it and give it a shot. And that was kind of where it went. Over the years, you develop more of what people tend to like, what is objectively good as opposed to subjectively good and things like that. But as far as story goes, I always look for characters that I can either root for or root against, characters that make you feel an emotion. The plot needs to obviously be interesting. But if the characters are not interesting, it doesn't matter how interesting the plot is. You're not going to want to get through it. You could have the best plot in the world, and if the characters are people say relatable, but a lot of the time that word gets confused with meaning that I have to sign off on every single thing this character would have done.
And
it's not necessarily what relatable.
It's unlikely in comics, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And so you need these characters that pull the story along, because if they're just not interesting, you don't care.
No.
The story gets boring very fast. So I look for characters that make you feel something, and I look for submissions that I always want to see the first 5 to 8 pages, because a lot of people love to send, and I found, and then this still happens, a lot of people love to send their best 5 to 8 pages. So you'll get the submission, and you can't make heads or tails of the storytelling because they're all over the place.
Gotcha.
And another bad problem is the fact that people think that the splash page is their best piece. So if I get like 5 or 8 splash pages sent into me, I don't know what's going on. I can't really make a
good
judgment. Yeah. So do you put together the artistic teams in Alterna, or do people come in as a complete package?
No, everybody comes in as a complete team. The sometimes the letterer, I have to make a suggestion if they really don't know any letterers or things like that. But I can always make suggestions for creators, but see, I feel bad doing that too, because let's say the art is just really bad and it needs a new artist. And I know a good artist, and the artist is, let's say, $60 to $100 a page. Your budget might not be ready for that. You know, I don't want to necessarily go, oh, hey, I know this great artist, and you'll get accepted immediately, but the book's going to cost you about $2,000 extra to do. That's not going to be, you know, I don't want to make that decision for anybody. Comics is really, really tough right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, to break even is an accomplishment at this point. Yeah. Let alone to turn a profit. So I don't want to put anybody behind the eight ball as far as that's concerned. But everything is a 100% ownership for the creative team. So if they want to do merchandise, they get everything that they get. If it gets optioned for a film, we don't see a penny of that. So all that kind of stuff, the creator retains that. Gotcha. But within the actual creative teams, they work out the contracts, the pay scale, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So one of the things I've sent an article into the guys earlier today about Marvel publishing its financials, and they've taken a bit of a hit recently. But you've kind of taken that approach of kind of bringing comics back down to being these kind of things that you read, and there's a slight disposability to them. They're not kind of something you buy for like $5, $6, whatever, and put in a bag and never to be read again.
So with the newsprint side of things.
Exactly.
So, yeah, for those that don't know, we print single issues on newsprint, and it really brings the cost down. It's about a third of the cost to print on newsprint. Wow. So because of that, we're able to make the cover price a third of the cost. It's not, I know some people think, you know, we might be losing a lot of money because it can't possibly be. That's the thing that's been going on in the industry for a while now. It can't possibly be cheaper to print on newsprint.
Yeah,
it really, really is. So we've been doing very well because of that, and it's been getting attention for our titles. When, you know, I know we have unknown creators and unknown books. They're good. They're good books. I mean, in some cases, not to step on toes, but in some cases, they're better than some of the stuff the Big Two is putting out.
Yeah, not every single one of them, but some
of them, yes. So, but that doesn't matter in many aspects of this industry. So in order to get attention, we have to figure, well, how do we do this? And the best way for someone to give us a shot is the lower cover price.
Yeah, but I think it's definitely a great strategy. Yeah. Did, I mean, and technically, did go on, Tenny.
I was going to say, and then for the trade, and I think I've heard you say this before, because it's more something that's going to go on a shelf and maybe bit last a bit longer, you do a slightly better page quality, do you, for a trade presentation? Is that right? Or a graphic novel?
Yeah, so the graphic novels and the trades, they're all on a premium paper stock. It's like a... Yeah. The newsprint is on a 32 pound newsprint, and the trades are on a 70 pound mat. I don't like glossy because glossy
doesn't reflect.
I was going to mention that was going to be my next question. The gloss that Marvel, and not so much DC at the moment. DC have sort of not the gloss back a bit. The gloss,
I think,
paper.
They're looking at us.
Good, because the reflection you get. I mean, I do a lot of my reading on a commute and stuff like that, and the reflection of the light on the train or something like that. You know. It really does glare off the paper of some of these companies.
You have to angle it to read the bloody thing at times.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, you're chasing the page around because you're avoiding the light. It gets very weird.
Yeah. And I remember Vertigo did it for a while as well. Vertigo's trades were on a sort of newsprint style paper. And that was the idea, and I loved that. And the books were nice and light, sticking your backpack for work and stuff like that. But it all seemed to change again, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Everyone went to this glossy paper for a while, and it really sort of irritated me. In fact, it helped me move to digital because digital is so much easier to read. Yeah,
and that's obviously that's not what we want to see happen, and the industry is not prepared for that. Digital only comprises, for almost every publisher, about 10% of the sales.
Okay.
They don't really release digital sales figures publicly because, quite frankly, they're not as good as I don't think they'd impress as many people as they would like them to impress.
Interesting.
So, because it's not like there's no way to keep track. There's absolutely a way to keep track. We get it totaled out and quantified to us every single quarter. So there's no reason that they don't need to necessarily release those figures.
Yeah.
I've got to say, your digital sales may have gone up this week, because I think I read about 30 of your titles.
And plus, they're very reasonably priced as well.
69p, man. Yeah.
I mean, what's that? Is that 99 cents?
All of our single issues are 99 cents on Comixology. And the trades are about half the physical cost. But at $1.50, because you can't list $1.50 or in you have to do 99 cent increments on Comixology. They won't let you do anything else. So the funny part is, you can buy the single issue, especially if you're in the States, you could buy the single issue for $1.50 and the digital for 99 cents and still pay $2.49, still cheaper than any other comic on the market.
Well, I'm about to double dip on one of your books, because I read Blood Realm on digital this week, and it's so wacky and out there and up my street. I've decided I definitely need a physical copy of that one.
Same with Mother Russia. Like, after reading the issue of that, I would want to get the trade for the rest of it.
Oh man, that rips along, doesn't it? I love that book.
That really works well in the guided view. I've got to say, not everything does, but that works really well.
You're switching between. Well, it's so tense. It just seems to be a comic of her legging it through a load of zombies constantly.
Yeah.
And it was oh my God, what's happening? And it's another one of those comics where I worried about the dog more than the people, but I'm a bit of a dog person.
I said one of the other ones we read was The Chair. That was by yourself, Peter. That was unrelentingly grim. That was really. I went from Mother Russia to that, and I was like, whoa, this is kind
of... Is that based on personal experiences?
You know, I spent some time in prison years ago. I got out when I was, like, 17. I was in there when I was 12.
So could you tell us, tell the listeners a bit about the chair?
Yeah, the chair is a psychological horror thriller that takes place on death row. But more than that, it's a character study of the choices we make in life. And then that you can, two people can come from the exact same circumstances in life, the same upbringing, the same horrible things, and still make a choice to do bad or to do good with their life. Mm. And as the story unfolds, it goes a little bit away from the traditional survival horror element that takes place in a prison to being more of a thriller and a drama and a crime story. But it got adapted to film. It's a Roddy Piper's last feature film before he passed away.
Yeah, I saw that. I know.
Available now. So.
Yeah, I saw you tweet today that it's available on Amazon Prime, isn't it? But sadly, only American Amazon Prime. So we're waiting for it to land on the British ones soon.
Yeah, right now it's on iTunes. It's on DVD and Blu-ray as well, and it's also on. I think it's called Tubi TV. Tubi TV.
We have to see who gets the UK rights for that one.
What was that experience like then? Having this comic book and then just getting it adapted. Did someone come to you about adapting that?
That was a very long time in the works. It was weird. The book first came out in single issue format in like 2007 ish. And it was very, very small run. It didn't even complete the full run because we went right from doing print on demand to doing a graphic novel because we got picked up for distribution in 2008. So it made no sense to kind of do a print on demand run for the last part of it when we had distribution and we should just do the full thing. Especially at that time, early on in Alterna. For those that don't know, especially, we've been around since, I think this is our 13th year. Like 2006 or so. And we mostly just did graphic novels for the longest time. This has only been about 2 years or so we've been doing single issues. And it just worked with people's schedules and things like that to put out graphic novels instead of doing the monthly or bi-monthly single issue release. So when The Chair was first released in 2008 as a graphic novel, we had people approaching us from different production companies, Rob Zombie's production company, Plan B, which was Brad Pitt's production company as well. And they all liked it. And this was always the funny response when they got to the end and they read everything. They said, "We really like it, but it's too dark. We think it's too dark for audiences and we don't want to change the story because it's impactful." And that was really funny, though, to hear from Rob Zombie's production company that they thought The Chair was too dark.
You could use that as a tagline, "Too dark for Rob Zombie."
Right? It was very, very strange. Because it seemed it was kind of a long, page-long email. It was really nice. And then it just ended with the last paragraph. Unfortunately, though, we thought the material might be too dark for our audiences. And I'm thinking, wow. Like, I know it might be because it's a heavier, more realistic horror as opposed to, you know, crazed killers and monsters and kind of supernatural-ish sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very grounded. It's closer to like a Silence of the Lambs sort of thing. But it's funny to go through that and just even remember the rejection stories and things like that. So for a while I put the film adaptation kind of on the back burner, and then there was more interest again around 2012, 2013. And at that point, it was one of those, you keep hearing there's interest, but no one wants to take it on because no one wants to necessarily change the story or water it down and things like that, especially with the new wave of horror, which is PG-13 and it's gutless horror that makes you leave the theater and you're like, "Oh, that was a great happy ending to this horror. I want people to leave the theater from a horror movie and be disturbed."
Yeah.
You know, that's the feeling you should have on
Saturday.
You know, fear and make you think a bit. So we just figured, let's just try to put a screenplay out together, and me and my wife, we put it together, and we started pitching it around, and she's the one who edited the graphic novel originally years ago,
right?
So eventually we got independent people involved, and I actually cast the film through contacting people on social media, which was really funny.
That's interesting.
If you ever need any sort of creepy people to be in the background, then you've got our addresses as well.
What does that say about us? Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a very, very interesting and different experience. I'm not quite sure I'd want to do another film. I think I'd much rather stick with comics.
Fair enough. They haven't done like a kind of a Snyder kind of shot for shot, like Sin City kind of deal. Have they like, it's kind of like pretty much independent of that.
It's I'd say it's about 75% true to the comic.
Okay.
There's parts of it that are more fleshed out on the film. Certain characters given more time. In the comic, the guards, they're all kind of interchangeable for the most part. You don't really get to know many of them. But Roddy Piper is the lead guard in the film, and it'd be just a shame, we thought, to get someone like Roddy Piper and not flesh out his character a bit. So you get stuff like that in the film, and backstories a little more fleshed out too on the characters.
Do you find you're getting a bit of attention now for the other properties in your lineup, though? I mean, a lot of these. I mean, well, I know we mentioned it a minute ago, but Mother Russia is crying out to be a movie. It's written. It's there. It's on the page, isn't it? You know.
Oh yeah.
There's a bunch of different comics at Alterna that would be great for film. I know Trespasser recently got optioned by one of the co-writers of the Wonder Woman film.
That's a great comic. I read that yesterday. Love that book. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites.
One of the things I saw you mention on Twitter, I think it was about Diamond Distribution, but more over the small press and indie comics. You're thinking of setting up a similar distribution scheme for them. Can you tell us anything more about that?
Yeah, I've been toying with the idea for a couple of years now, and a lot of retailers will see the fact that we've been doing direct distribution just to retailers. We've been offering that for like a year or so now. I think we deal with about 50 to 60 comic shops directly at this point. International is awful, again, because of the fact that the shipping is so high. There's so many international shops that want to get our books in direct, but it's a killer. It's absolutely a killer. I think that it takes away almost all the profit margin because the shipping's so high.
Would you think of maybe having a contact, say, in Europe, and then they print in there and then mailing out on site? Is that something that could be done?
I've thought about that, but that's one of those things where you might as well just ship the books and take a hit,
right?
Because the printing costs and everything else to do a separate run entirely, and then to still have to pay for them to ship the books out, it just would be completely offset, and it might actually end up being more money because the amount of demand would have to really, really be there to have a whole separate printing cost set up in another country. And also you can't quality control anything. So I can't get anything back and make sure that, okay, these are identical to the books that go out in the U.S. as well. And the biggest reason, again, that we keep the cost down is because of the newsprint.
Yeah, so which isn't always really available, is it?
Yeah.
You'd almost need to employ someone over here to check it for you, and you'd have to trust them. And it becomes a complicated matter, doesn't it? Yeah.
And I think if we did something, you know, if we looked 5-10 years down the road, there's definitely ways to do it. And to kind of partner up with sending large shipments over to, you know, the UK or Australia or wherever. And then that would be sort of like an alternative distribution center in those countries and have someone else to take care of those fulfillment orders. But that's so many years down the road. It's something that I have in the back of my mind, but not necessarily anything that I can execute within a year or two even.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
As far as doing distribution for indies, I don't think it would be quite as hard as some people think it would be. I think the biggest thing to do is realize what does Diamond focus on and focus on what they don't focus on. Everyone wants to say, you know, go head to head with Diamond. That's stupid. That's not good business. It's going to get you squashed out immediately.
Yeah.
Diamond's biggest concern is pre-orders. They do the whole. They got a whole catalog for it. They really, really care to get the pre-orders in. It's that kind of thing. The reorder situation, though, for when books sell out, that has always been a big, big kind of a vacuum that needs to be filled. And sometimes it is filled, sometimes it's not. But Diamond doesn't really do that great of a job with reorders, and everyone pretty much knows that. So the indie distribution would basically be filling reorders, and also for people who, let's say they did an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter or a crowdfunded project, or they just have their own book printed up, you could distribute that and have that available on a site for retailers to order with a certain kind of discount code, and and also make it direct so that customers as well can order, because some people don't have, many people don't have a comic shop. So it's all about kind of hitting up those two markets. And this is a thing that we've been doing at Alterna for a while now. And it's been booming for us, whereas our distribution, we noticed a small decline that kind of was commiserate with the rest of the industry. It was another downturn of a year. I believe it's going to be about 8 to 10% of another downturn. And but meanwhile, our direct sales went through the roof. It was a 1,700% increase.
Bloody hell!
So, and it goes hand in hand, unfortunately, with the fact that every single new comic book day, we just had one where five issues were released and two graphic novels were released last Wednesday. And I still, every single month, I get the emails. I get dozens of emails. I can't find this book at my local shop. I pre-ordered the book. They didn't get the book. All that kind of stuff, that there's problems either with distribution or with the shops that don't want to get the books in. So in turn, what happens is we sell direct. They order then from us direct. They never look back. Right. Because, you know, if you're someone and you know you can get something somewhere, you're going to just go there as opposed to constantly trying to, you know, travel and take time out of your day and go somewhere where you don't really know if they're going to have it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
So it's been a problem, and that's kind of been a problem with the whole industry.
Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So we're almost going back to grassroots around it, aren't we? We're almost...
Yeah.
You know. And the other thing you I noticed you offer, Pete, is you offer some quite cheap advertising rates, don't you? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Advertising's very cheap in the books. I think a quarter page is as cheap as like $25.
Okay.
That's nice.
Yeah,
I think that equates to 49 pence in England.
Probably.
It's just a bit of free advertising for you there, but yeah, I'm sorry to move that on to you, mate. we've been reading a stack load of your books this week, and I just wondered whether you wanted to talk about a couple of them. You've already mentioned that Trespass has been optioned. So how did that come to you, that particular one? Because that's a great book. For people who don't realise, it's a kind of a guy and his kid live in a sort of, there's been a sort of some kind of radioactive accident, isn't there? And they live basically in the middle of nowhere, and something crash lands in the forest. Is that a good description?
Yeah, yeah. You get a strange visitor that crash lands into the forest, and the father has to really wonder, is this friend or foe, and is it worth pretty much putting the lives of himself and his child on the line to figure that out. And the story kind of takes a very grim turn, and it leads to a series of events that have a big impact on both of them. It's really funny though, because when Trespasser was first submitted to me, it was submitted as a black and white one shot.
Okay.
It was primarily just the first issue. And I told the author, Justin Ryan, I told him, I said, you got something really good here. I'd like to see it in color if possible, because color honestly just sells better usually than black and white. Mm-hmm. And Christian Rossi's a very talented artist and a great colorist as well. So I thought it would be a shame to just have a black and white book with his art. And he expanded on it when I told him there has to be something that happens after this issue. It can't just end this way. I think there's something, some kind of buildup that would occur, some kind of something that would happen that would lead to a series of events, obviously, that would change everyone's life and that kind of thing. And just the drama is already there, and you got a great sci-fi thriller mixed with kind of like a post-apocalyptic feel too, without really diving into that Mad Max kind of thing.
Yeah, there's little moments as the sort of family humor, like when he fires that ray gun for the first time and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of nice touches in it. You know, improve it. How did he come to you? Was it just a cold submission? Was it from Justin and Christian? Was it all?
Yeah, it was just a submission that gets sent in. I get about 100 to 200 submissions a month.
So, oh my word!
It was one of those.
How do you go through all them? You and your wife. You and your wife do it, or?
It's 99% of it is me.
Right.
So I do practically everything at Alterna. I ship out orders. I do all the publishing stuff, the distribution end of things. I look at submissions, all that
The only thing you don't do, I'm guessing, is sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that occurs when you least expect it. You know, if one day I tweet out, it's just a series of letters that make no sense. It's all, he fell asleep at the phone. I've fallen asleep at the phone trying to update things, but thankfully nothing insane has been tweeted out or retweeted out.
We thought we'd catch you early in the day, dude. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The another one was I thought I'd mention is Blood Realm. I became sort of slightly obsessed with Blood Realm. It's kind of like this sort of strange experimental mythological sort of puppet theater of a thing, isn't it? You know, like the shadow puppet things they do. By Robert Geronimo, is that his name? And he writes he writes and draws it. And a Thomas Maurer letters it.
Maurer, yep.
Yeah, that's really different, isn't it? A very strange book.
Yeah. It's a book that when I got it, I knew I liked it, but it was one of those you wrestle with the submission, because usually when I get a submission, I know, and I hate to tell people, you know, send me 5 to 8 pages because of the fact that I know on the first page whether or not I want to read more. And I think most readers feel that way too. So this one was one of those ones where I knew I liked it, but I didn't know if there would necessarily be an audience for it because it was so different. It's kind of like an illustrated book as opposed to a traditional comic book. But
yeah, the elements of sequential aren't quite as obvious. Yeah. I'll put it that way, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's definitely a story that really pulls you in, and it's very epic and engrossing. It's like a Dungeons and Dragons, Lord of the Rings vibe to it. But I didn't know necessarily. I thought it was very interesting, but it was one of those, let's just roll the dice and give it a shot because it's a book that deserves to be given a shot. And at the end of the day, how I make up my mind on a submission is basically, if I see this published by somebody else, will I kick myself in the ass for it? And the answer is yes, I submit the, you know, I publish the book.
Oh, I absolutely loved it, man. I have to say, I think when you say Lord of the Rings or something like that, it's almost that crossed with something like Kafka or something strange like that, you know, like a maybe a sort of postmodern sort of European movie or something like that, because it's got just moments of like, fuck me, what's going on, you know. So who are the sisters? There's a sort of sisterhood who wander through it, aren't there? I forget their names from the top of my head, but the they're sort of hauntingly strange, aren't they? It's done in sort of black and white with a real sort of blood red background to it.
Yeah, he's got a good color scheme going on that's powerful for it, and the characters are just these larger than life characters, but at the same time, it's pulled along with this narrative that makes it very easy to place yourself in that situation, and
right.
there's a character in it that's almost like an avatar for the reader as they go through it, and they kind of have this feeling of helplessness throughout as they're being taken along on this journey, and then you see things unfold as they see things unfold. And it's a very odd story. It's a very very intense kind of story. Yeah. And the best part with any good story I find is when we have readers that they're theorizing about things, they're coming up with their own way, the story is the story going this way, is the story going that way, is always very interesting when we get stuff like that. And and I didn't really get much of that for the first 10 years because we only put out graphic novels, so they would read the whole story in its entirety, so there is no theorizing, so they read the whole thing and then they say they like it or they don't like it, and thankfully most of the time they like it. But so this kind of thing was a bi-monthly, a monthly release, so people think about it, people anticipate, and they come up with their own kind of way the story is going and things like that, and it makes it interesting for us too.
It definitely stays with you, doesn't it? It's one of those comics that you read and it sort of, it does. I went and reread the issue one just to sort of to make my mind up what I thought about it. But the other thing I noticed about it as well is I think I tweeted about it and I immediately got some sort of return tweet saying thank you for being a follower of the Blood Realm, or you know, sort of in character. Was that part of your idea, or was that the creator's, or where did that come from?
I always Robert posed that idea because I do that a bunch on some of the other alternate pages. Sometimes I'll encourage people to speak as the character sometime on some of these pages. And Robert said, I noticed that this and this occurs sometimes with these other books. Do you mind if I do a page just like that? And I kind of take on this character. And yeah. He's like, I'm not sure if I should, because it's an evil character. And I'm like, no, I think that would be really fun for people. So he started doing that. And that's been great, because people get a big kick out of that. And his fan interaction is wonderful.
He's nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. And as soon as that happened, loads of people liked it, and it became like a conversation. And yeah, no, definitely, it's a really good idea to have that per sort of series, almost, I suppose, you know.
I think it's something that would be interesting too, even if the bigger companies did that. I'm kind of surprised they don't have an interactive Spider-Man Twitter or a Batman Twitter, you know, to kind of bring that gap across. And also, even you could talk about. And you could bring in comic history that way. I mean, if I was in charge of Marvel, I'd want this done tomorrow. I have a Spider-Man Twitter page that he talks about that time that he faced Venom, or the time that he faced Kingpin, or whatever, and bring up an issue number and this and that, and talk about it as if these issues are recapturing and retelling the stories that he actually went through. I think that would bridge a divide between the digital generation that's on social media.
When people try doing things like that, though, they try too much, don't they? When people do these sort of avenues, it's like, oh, if you follow this Twitter and read this new book, it will be doing this, that, and the other, which doesn't work as well. I find.
Be a good thing to try and get turn over the readers, turn over maybe like film goers into hopefully comic readers, if you can kind of use the social media to kind of bridge that gap. But the person running that account would have to. Kind of on the board, in the ball with like witty comebacks and knowledge of the character.
Yeah, the knowledge is a big thing these days, especially with the depth. You'd have to have someone like Kurt Busiek, or you know, someone like that, or Brevoort, who's got that knowledge of the Marvel universe. But I actually think it would work in the small press as well. I think for all our characters, we do a comic as well, Pete, and I think we've got very sort of distinctive characters in that. And I think that would absolutely be hilarious. I'm mostly thinking of Dan's one-liners that would come out if someone tweeted Viper. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They might be a bit blue, but I think that would really work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the one title that stuck out to me, we were talking about adaptions. I mean, for me, this already, I'm thinking this would be an amazing TV series. Issue 5 of a 5-issue run has just recently been released, and I've read issue 1, I've downloaded the other 4, and I can't wait to get through them. That's Tinseltown.
Oh, I read issue 1 of this. Loved it. Yeah.
Tinseltown is a sort of comic that I've never read sort of anything like it. It's an avenue, I mean, especially like coming from the UK as well, like female police officers, like in you know, the early days of Hollywood.
Or
you know.
She's kind of a police officer as well, isn't she? It's all a bit unclear at the start there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I love that sort of, you know, you've already got the setting, and you're already on the back foot when she steps into the world of Hollywood, where you can't believe anything really. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, how did that one come?
I think
that'd
be a very interesting.
That'd be a great like TV HBO show, something like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a TV show. Yeah.
How did that one come about?
That one was another. It was a submission that came in. Originally, it was called Abigail O'Leary. I suggested to change the character's name to Abigail Moore, just because it wouldn't be as stereotypical to have that kind of an Irish name. And I suggested kind of punching up the title too, because it just didn't really explain anything. It wasn't sexy enough in a way, you know. It wasn't like that level of interest to just Abigail O'Leary. What does that mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. As soon as you said that, I mean, it sprung to mind. I've seen quite a few, especially in Comixology, like female-led characters, and it's just their name as the title, isn't it? It doesn't always work to draw you in, does it?
So the Tinseltown name just kind of alludes to Hollywood, and especially the early days of Hollywood. So this character that she was inspired by her father, that was a police officer, and he was killed in the line of duty. She always wanted to become a cop just like her father, but she kind of went down a wrong path in life as a teenager, and it explains that in the first issue.
Yeah.
And she was now trying to right the wrongs of her past, because she just had a tough time coping with his death. So she thinks that they're hiring actual police officers in Hollywood, and to some extent they kind of are, but they're not necessarily real police officers. They're more just like set dressing for the most part to kind of keep up an image.
Yeah.
And eventually, though, she realizes there's a lot of awful things going on in Hollywood, especially the early days of Hollywood, a lot of corruption, yeah. a lot of people being taken advantage of. And she gets in kind of deep with a lot of the seediness that's occurring and she wasn't really prepared for. So she kind of ends up getting in way over her head and trying to fight her way out of it. And she gets help from a friend that she makes, a stuntman, who also is kind of on the fringe a bit of Hollywood and knows about some of the weirdness that's been going on. And I think it would be a great TV show. I think the characters are really well fleshed out, and I know that they want to do another series too, so we'll see.
Yeah, because end of that first issue lends itself to the end of a TV episode almost to me. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Without ruining anything, there's something that happens and she's suddenly sort of dropped into the middle of the sort of cold reality that she's actually got to do something with her job.
I mean, we've talked about the importance of first issues and characters and stuff. Yeah. And by the end of, like, certainly Tinseltown issue one, you have a grip on what the main character is, what the situation is, and then by the end of it, it's like, right, let's see the mystery and let's see how this whole adventure plays on for the next, like, four issues. It's wonderfully paced. The artwork's magnificent as well.
It reminded me of a Bond Dessiné book, I have to say. I looked at it and thought that could easily be like a Belgian or French book. So that sort of style.
I mean, I have to get this one.
It's that sort of genre that I'd expect from European comics. We see a lot of European comics talking about, like, you know, America, whether it be the Wild West. So sometimes we see more of that from Europe than we do from America, don't we? A lot of these sort of comics.
They love a bit of historical comics in Europe as well. So saying it in, was it the 20s or 30s, is it, Pete? I can't remember the era.
Yeah, it's 1915.
Oh, okay. Yeah, slightly earlier. Yeah, I can see that. I can easily see that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So when they're taking in perspective titles, as we talked about earlier, would you kind of shy away from taking stuff you see quite a lot of, say, superheroes, zombies, or something like that? Or obviously, you've got Mother Russia, but
does it have to have an extra twist on it? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't really shy away from that kind of stuff. It's just more I don't tend to get anything substantial. I tend to get stuff that's, if it's a superhero, it usually copies another famous superhero.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing where someone figures, well, I can't really ever get into Marvel, maybe writing Spider-Man, so I'll come up with my own version of Spider-Man. And unfortunately, you know, you can go do that and self-publish and whatever else, but at least at Alterna, I want something a bit more to it. I want something kind of different.
I mean, obviously, you've been doing this for quite a few years now. So, how have you seen the tastes and the sort of flavor of submissions change over that period of time since you started with Alterna?
I think when I started Alterna, zombies were really, really popular.
Yeah.
I don't get quite as many zombie submissions anymore. Mother Russia is a bit of an older title that stems from a series called FUBAR. And FUBAR was a zombie war anthology series.
Yeah, that was pretty big. That was pretty big when I remember hearing a lot about FUBAR. That was pretty big.
Yeah, that made it into my local comic shop.
Yeah.
And, I think I'm seeing a lot more lately, a lot more of sci-fi and fantasy, a lot more of a Western type of comics being sent in. There was a weird time about maybe a couple months ago where I received about ten or 20 submissions, and it was either. I was looking through the submissions and it was jumping between samurai as a genre or wrestling. So it was so weird. It was just 10 or 20 submissions in a row. It was either one was a samurai or one was about a wrestler. And just over and over. I didn't know if there was something that was going on where maybe there was a contest and people had all these submissions lying around. It just felt really weird. How come this many people be working on samurai and wrestler comics?
I've done a comic about a samurai who is a wrestler.
And that's weird. I didn't see one of those. I think if I did see one of those, it might have been, you know.
I say it's weird in Japan, like you get a lot of sports comics, but that's not really a done thing in the West.
Is it? Yeah, definitely.
No, I mean, like, there's basketball, football comics, and they like make a lot of money and sell a lot of units, but yeah, it's never really kind of taken off in the West.
I suppose wrestling became a bit sort of kitschy, a bit hipster for a while, didn't it? We got a little research. You remember Kapow, which was a big comic convention we had over here for a couple of years? They had a wrestling ring at that, didn't they, at one point? You know, almost became
It's in the middle of the Comic Con, like, so you have the tables around and that, people wrestling in the middle.
I think I would take a wrestling comic in a heartbeat. I think if it worked it in effectively, because especially if they look at the 80s version of WWF, it pretty much is a live action comic book.
Yeah, isn't it?
I think you know, that's why they kind of struggle.
Do that very easy,
because you've got the live action thing, which is kind of bigger and it's got everything going for it. It's kind of I don't know how you would match that in a comic book. You'd have to go some.
Yeah, we've had a couple of indie small press books over here, haven't we?
They've dialed it up even more, which is what you
The big sort of crazy sort of really strange stuff going on, like one of the wrestlers is an alligator or so, you know, there's this sort of thing going on.
Reckless Wrestlers, is that
Reckless
one of
Reckless Wrestlers is just crazy shit. And good for it, do you know what I mean? It makes total sense. The other one we talked about recently, Pete, is Exilium, which I have to say I really loved. It's got a kind of a sort of mashup of maybe Alien Nation and V, and a just sort of fun adventure story, isn't it? It's how did that come to you?
Yeah, that again was another cold submission.
Oh, great! Cool.
Yeah, we get a lot of these. I don't really. I meant to make an attempt a couple of years ago to start really scouring submissions and looking at, especially looking at Kickstarters and Indiegogo and things like that. But we get so many submissions, I never have the time to do anything like that. So this one was another one that came to us, and I felt that it really was a good sci-fi story that we didn't really have anything like that. We have Eden, which is like sci-fi fantasy, and then closer to like a Star Wars, and then we have Exilium now, which is closer to like you said, Alien Nation, a Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, V, that kind of thing. And I just felt, you know, the art is really interesting. The story has characters in it.
It's a lovely, clean art, isn't it? Is it Solomon Farias? Is that his name? Is that how you pronounce it? It's real sort of pro level. I messaged Ben, actually. I'm chatting a little bit with Ben.
Ben Slabik is the writer. Yep.
Yeah, and Solomon's the artist. So they're a great combination. They've really got it together, I think. The other thing I was going to ask about that book is issue 3 came out last Wednesday, didn't it, as I recall, is that right?
Yeah, it came out on the 9th. Yep.
Yeah, now it hasn't hit Comixology yet. Is that a struggle for you to get them on the same day with Comixology?
No, we usually try to stagger it.
That
this way the everybody can go through getting it with print first, and it doesn't step on the toes of comic shop retailers as well.
Interesting.
But, I think if the sales were there, again, going back to the digital part of it, I think if the sales were higher, I think we would pay a little more attention to marketing digital books. But unfortunately, it's not really there. And so it makes it difficult to want to sacrifice the print sales you know, giving up the digital. But so that'll be on there in about a month digitally. They're all kind of staggered that way.
Right. So you give it for the next issue, the last issue will come out on digital. Is that kind of the approach? Or So one behind. Yeah. In relation to the marketing stuff, is there anything that you've learned as you've gone along in relation to marketing your books? Do you find that sending preview copies out, for example, helps? Or are there certain websites you go to and certain ones that you don't? Or any little tips you can perhaps give to our listeners?
I found over the years that most comic sites and things like that and review sites, it doesn't really help. I find it doesn't really help. I found that what has managed to help a lot is social media interaction combined with people who review books on YouTube, honestly.
Really?
We get a lot of people, even if it's a very small channel that has only a couple hundred subscribers or whatever, they'll see the review, they'll hear that person's excitement for the comic. Or, you know, sometimes that's what's funny too right now about the industry. People get very upset about a very bad review or whatever it is on a comic.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I don't know about anybody else, but sometimes the really bad reviews actually make me want to seek something out even more than the really good ones, because I want to see how bad it is. So there's always a way to have a benefit. And it creates a conversation, which is more important than anything else. I never want to discourage, because we've had a couple bad reviews over our years. I never want to discourage those people from feeling like they can express that point of view, because as soon as you start doing that and you start wanting only the good reviews to be out there, it becomes a very weird and stale and false kind of environment. And then you can't trust it at all, and it's not interesting anymore, and the conversation gets shut down.
I think there's a fine balance there, though, Pete. There's a constructive bad review, isn't there? And I think some people give you a bad review to get clicks, don't they? I think sometimes. You see that a lot. Some people just go to town on people for, like, unnecessary reasons.
I mean,
but I think if it's a constructive one, look, I didn't like this for this reason, then I don't see any problems with that at all. Yeah,
we had a really bad one.
I'm at the point, too, seriously, I don't even care if it's a non-constructive criticism. If all it is that the person says, I don't even like this person's name, so I'm not going to like their book. I don't even care if it's that at this point.
Yeah, I had a bad day on the way to the comic shop or something like that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, because, again, the worst thing that can happen for your comic book is that no one at all talks about it. If someone wants to go absolutely crazy on it and just give ridiculously irrational reasons and tear up the comic at the end and be very, very, have a lot of showmanship and flair and insanity about a review, that makes it even more interesting and gets even more attention for your comic. And as long as you know how to play it up that way, and it's an easy thing to do to just disarm anybody and be like, oh, thanks for reading. I hope you like the next one. It's let them get as crazy as they want to get.
We had to really, a couple of years ago, I was in an anthology, and there was like all these messages flying around early in the morning, and someone, a larger site had done a review, but it was so preposterous, the review, you couldn't even take it seriously, and people kind of get a bit upset about it. I said, well, what are you going to do? The guy just doesn't like it, so just move on. It's
all of us irrationally love and hate some things. It's very difficult to explain sometimes, well, why do you like this movie or this song or this character over this character? Sometimes you can't really explain it. It's just just love it. Even things like when I was a kid, I really, really loved Spider-Man. Spider-Man was my favorite character. I knew of other characters, but for some reason, I really liked Spider-Man. I didn't think about, oh, the mythos and the how does this character behave? And I just loved Spider-Man. I loved the way he looked. I don't know why I loved the way he looked. It's just, I loved Spider-Man.
It was
at that point. It's very difficult sometimes, I think, for a lot of people, to quantify the reasons why. I think, though, if it's an official website or an official newspaper, and then the review is completely incomprehensible and it's just all based on emotion and a personal vendetta or whatever, then it becomes a little bit more of a journalism ethics. But if it's a reader who just has a YouTube page or a website or a Twitter or whatever it is, and they bought your book and they just go, I hate it. I don't even know why I hate it, but I hate it.
Yeah,
that's fine. You know why? Because I also accept when people go, I love it. I don't know why I love it, but I love it.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to accept that, I'm going to accept it as well.
I mean, for me, the important thing is as long as they've read it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you judge for yourself, if you don't like it afterwards, that's fine.
Fine.
But don't create sweeping judgments and try to influence other people when you have no real information to do that.
Let's face it, a lot of stuff out there that is very popular and a lot of people like is utter shite. I mean, allow me to draw your attention, Peter, to Simon Cowell. I'm sure you're aware of his existence. Now, there's no one who can say that is a fucking good television program, but it's hugely popular. Or I'm trying to pick something you might know. What about
Morgan?
Or Jersey Shore? There you go. That's a big favourite of a lot of people, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that love things that and for various reasons. You know, there's movies I love just because I know how bad they are, and I love them because they're entertaining because of that.
Bring it on. Yeah. Puppet Master 10, I think, is still my favorite film.
And sometimes there's I think some people, and this is where the artist needs, and the creator as well, when I say the artist, needs to separate themselves from their art a bit. Because someone will enjoy it sometimes. Most people will enjoy the thing you've created for reasons that you weren't aware of, that they would enjoy it when you were creating it at that time.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking about this the other day, especially about songs. Songs will mean something very different for everybody.
Yeah.
So when you go usually to find out, well, what inspired them to create this song? Usually it's the stupidest reason you've ever heard. It's the dumbest thing ever. It doesn't hit you anymore in the same way as when, you know, you thought, oh, this, they must have been in this state of mind and they must have been feeling this. And then you hear what they were going through and it's very mundane and stupid.
Yeah.
But that's art. That's the way it is. As soon as you put it out, it is open for interpretation. And I think that's kind of where we need to start as artists and creators, accepting that not everyone is going to appreciate or understand it in the same way that you maybe intended to.
Indeed.
But that doesn't mean that that's an invalid way to experience art. I think that's just part of the human experience. And if you want to try to control that,
if you tried to make a painting that would please absolutely everyone, it's absolutely pointless and fruitless task, because
it's impossible.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
If you paint it bland so you don't upset people, people would be upset that it's bland. So it's better just to kind of go for something you want to do. And that's
what happens most of the time, especially when you have bigger corporations involved that want to really reach as many people as possible. So what they view it is, well, you know, let's make it as safe as we possibly can.
Exactly,
so no one really gets offended or hurt, or, you know, it doesn't challenge anything necessarily. It's just kind of bland, but at least maybe as many people as possible will like it. And every time that occurs, you get the reaction of practically no one likes it. It doesn't do anything.
I mean, that film, The Meg, I wanted to see a lot more blood and guts in that film. That'd have made it so much better. I quite enjoyed it for what it was. Do you know what I mean? But like, just kind of they gut it just to get as many people as they can to like, and it ends up just like Rihanna dying, and just this is another one of these films you forget in like 6 months.
Made a lot of money though.
I was going to mention Rob Liefeld, he was on Twitter and someone tried to kind of give him a bit of a burn about some of his artwork, and he pointed out like he sold over a million units of
I saw that earlier,
Youngblood, and it's like, at the time, god, I was buying every single Image title that came out. It's non-stop.
I think people piled on a bit too much on that one. And I think there's always two sides to an argument, isn't there? It, technically, probably not very good, but he did sell money. He did make money out of it. Which is the right side.
Rob's art, it's dynamic, and it really speaks more emotionally than technically accurate. You know, you can point out the flaws in almost everybody. I know people, obviously, it's sometimes it's easier to point out the flaws of Rob's work. But everyone, especially the whole feet thing, is always funny, because everybody hides feet as much as they can. You know, so it's kind of funny, because even people who everyone seems to respect, like Jim Lee, for instance, there's a lot of cases where Jim's got feet behind rocks or smoke or grass another character, just because it feels awkward a lot of the times to have a character just completely be level with the surface and match the surface. It's just not really a dynamic look. There's no real drama to that image.
I'm totally going to look at loads of classic artwork a different way now. Whenever I look at it, I'm going to be looking for the feet.
So what titles have you got coming out? Is there anything you'd like to bring up? Well, we've been through a few of your titles there, but you've got a garage for titles there. What else would
spike our interest? We've got a lot coming up. Now, I think we've got nearly 30 titles out, and I think if I counted every single thing, we've got over 100 issues out at this point.
Nice.
Many of which are out of print and sold out at this point, but we've got more coming out. We've got Wicked Righteous is continuing in February. We've got Actual Roger, Unit 44. Those are kicking off in a few weeks. A title called ICYMI, which is In Case You Missed It, and that's going to have reprinted issues of out of print, all ages, and teen books. This way we can get as wide of an audience as possible interested, and that will also be in newsstands as well. This way, you know, especially a newsstand reader is an impulse buy. It's not necessarily a comic shop reader.
When you say newsstand, it's a slightly different situation in the UK. So we have something called news
agents. Because I know there's news agents in the UK.
Yeah.
And we do have a couple of different news agents that distribute Alterna. the information on where exactly the locations are, it's so difficult, because I found out the other day we have a lot of different news agents in Poland.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't really aware of that. It's in one of the biggest grocery store chains in Poland. So it's funny to see that sometimes it's easier to get in these areas than it is to get in a local comic shop in the States.
Do you news agent distribute in the UK at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I think there's three or four.
Right.
But I'm not entirely sure of the region or the location exactly.
Yeah.
They don't really release that information. I think they feel if they release it, then I could just contact and work out a deal direct. So a lot of that stuff is coming up. It gets distributed there, but we're not going to tell you exactly where. But it hurts, though, because then I can't say where people should go to get it.
Exactly.
So, double-edged sword. It's just the way publishing works. I wish they were a little more transparent, because then it could help the marketing.
Okay.
And also, thanks to digital, no matter where you are in the world, there's a good chance that you can get alternate comics, isn't there? Really?
Yeah,
that's the great thing about digital.
Yeah, absolutely. We got everything on Comixology, and we're going to start selling. We already have 10 digital downloads available on our own site, which is orderalterna.com. We're going to get more on there every month as well. So we're going to start doing our own digital selling very, very soon in terms of having the full line on there.
Awesome. So obviously you got loads of stuff coming up, but obviously you write comics yourself. Is there anything that you're personally working on at the moment? You're juggling so many balls at the moment. I can't imagine that you're working on a fresh comic yourself, but is there anything in the
No, definitely not. I haven't had the chance to. I've worked on a couple short stories here and there over the years, but I haven't had a chance to do another series or a full graphic novel in a very long time. At this point in time, I'm more satisfied with helping other people get their work out there and coming up with new ways to try to reinvigorate the comic industry, and especially to help support indie and other creators to just get in as many places as possible, because this industry right now is really hurting. And and I know that there's people that don't necessarily want to understand or admit that it's hurting as much as it is, but it's something that's if we keep going down the course and we don't do anything different, if the whole industry just keeps doing what it's been doing, we're looking at between 5 to 10 years, we could see massive, massive devastating loss in the comic industry. There's a point that it might actually cripple the entire thing.
Yeah, I think so, once you hit that point where you are unable, I think when you hit that point where the money you're paying an artist and a writer isn't enough for them to have a good lifestyle on, you'll start getting people who are drawing and writing as a second job. And that will start saying...
We've already been there for 5 years now, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of that going.
And we're seeing the result of that. And because nothing changed. And the biggest reason as to why that's occurring is because the distribution is not growing. We aren't getting these comics in more places. We're getting them in less. When Alterna started in 2008 with Diamond, it was about 4,000 comic shops. Now there's going to be less than 2,000. That's half of the shops in 13 years.
Yeah.
And if I count within since we started with being distributed by them, it's 11 years.
I mean,
so
certainly in the UK, I think in the UK, already 13 shops have shut down in the first 10 days of the year, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw that quoted on Facebook. Yeah. We were chatting about that the other day, weren't we? Yeah. It's a big shutdown here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to support your independent shops and your independent publishers, and, you know. I mean, when you hear that sentiment online, it sounds like a blanket statement, like a copy and paste statement, but it is so true, isn't it? Everyone's saying it because it does mean.
And I think there's something that you know, without actually highlighting how bad it is or just harping on how bad it is, if every single publisher and creator, even if all they did was support their local shops within, you know, a 50-mile radius or whatever.
Yeah, do a signing and stuff like that.
Definitely. Told people on New Comic Book Day, you know, visit this shop, it's one of my favorites, and actually mention the name. You know, there's so many people that they'll just say, support your local shop, and that's about it. And some people go, I don't have a local shop, or I don't know where one is.
Yeah.
So how can I support one that I don't have? But if you actually give a name or a city or both, which would be ideal, a lot of people will then go, oh, okay, I didn't know there was a shop over there. I mean, there's been so many times I've mentioned my local stores, and I'll have people who live within 10 miles of that store. They did not know that that store existed. But it's because I had mentioned that, and where it was. And then they go, oh, wow, I didn't know there was that store. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
So if every single pro, if every single creator, indie to Marvel and DC, if they could just give actual names and locations for these stores, if they could do signings at their local stores, if they could, you know, just even reach out to the local store and see, oh, what could we do? What could I do to, you know, get some business for you guys? What would be the best way? And there's lots of free and easy and simple ways to do that. And I'd love to see that happen. You know, even on a free comic book day, I'd love to see if Marvel and DC's Twitter start retweeting all those free comic book day sales that these stores are doing. You know, stop making it that your page has to be this perfect, pristine corporate page. I know they want to keep it that way. But support and promote the stores that are doing the same for you. Yeah. Stop making this one-sided relationship, you know?
Yeah definitely.
Well, I think they're going to have to take a long look at the way they're doing things. And
It's going to be an interesting year for comics. And very interesting indeed.
Yeah, this is a turning point here. Yeah. Because if we have 3 years in a row of loss, which is what it's looking like, I mean, there's people right now that are thinking it's going to be 200 stores closing this year. So by the time this year occurs, this time next year, we're going to hear about 200 stores going under. Yeah. And that's kind of been the number that everyone's talking about, because there's so many right now that are on the brink because they've had two bad years in a row.
You know what I'd like to see, Pete? I'd like people to talk about the movies and the TV series at the same time reference the comics. I think if we did that, we'd quadruple the amount of comics talk on the internet easily. You know, every time they talk about Cloak and Dagger, talk about the comic series. Every time you talk about New Teen Titans, talk about the comic series. You know, but it doesn't seem to correlate.
And even
from the companies that are running these comics, you know, you see them talk about the Teen Titans TV series, but do they really reference, I don't know, the George Perez comics? Or, you know, it doesn't go on enough.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
And it'd be very, very easy, because all they need to do is put something in the contract that says, look, you guys got to do one bumper for us, one little promo, where you're holding the comic and you're talking about, hey, check out Iron Man comics at your local comic shop. And you could play that right before a film. You could play that after the film. You could, you know, that would be a really amazing after credits end scene to have everyone... Yeah. You know, sitting around, they're reading the comics of their character and they just kind of look up and look kind of awkwardly at each other. And then that's it. And the film closes out. Yeah. There's a million ways you can do it in a fun, organic way that makes comics go, oh, wow, you know, these things actually matter, too. And it's important to go seek these things out if I'm interested in this character at all.
At the moment, it seems more likely that you'll get the X-Men doing an advert for erectile dysfunction than you will for their own comic. they did this terrible advert in the UK, Pete, about, like, was it an internet provider or BT or something like that? Do you remember? And it was like about someone running about trying to get to the connection in time.
Oh,
and
God,
it was just
don't give
fucking
a shit.
Embarrassment. And I'm thinking, why isn't this about X-Men comics? Wow. Come on, what's going on? Anyway, that's rant.
Yeah. But we're gonna end on a positive note, because obviously we want to, you know, you are
well, that about sums up the entire state of the comic industry, right? We just can't seem to get it up.
But there are like
that's going on the website as a quote, my friend. Yeah.
but can at Alterna.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You can get an erection at Alterna.
Hard comics all the time. No. But you are fighting the good fight and you're putting out some great titles. So for our listeners who may not have tried any Alterna books, where can they go to find out more or get some digital issues or, you know, order online, etc.?
Okay, yeah, especially for UK listeners in particular, but any listener at all, you can go to alternacomics.com/retailers and find a list of comic shops in your area that support Alterna. They might not be in stock at the time because our books tend to sell out pretty quick, but you can always tell them, hey, I want to get some in. You know, let's put them on a pull list or pre-order or whatever, or back order some of the ones that are in stock. And there's actually a list of UK stores that have Alterna in their shop. So you can go to that site. That's quick and easy. If you don't mind ordering direct and paying the shipping, you can also order. I think we have the almost all bundle. I think that's something like $100, $130, $140 to get like 55, 65 comics. It's still cheaper with shipping it's still going to be cheaper than pretty much getting anything from any other publisher. That's the saddest part.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it now, and it's almost all bundle, and it's 70. It's just over £70, and that gets all your comics, presumably.
Yeah, yeah, and then you know, even with the shipping, it's I think it still comes out to less than $3 a copy. So yeah, it's even that's a great deal in terms of if you look at it proportionally to other publishers. So there's a lot of ways to get our stuff, and of course we're on Comixology as well for anyone who wants to read digital comics. But there's a lot of different UK, a lot of different UK shops that carry Alterna. Buzzard Comics, in particular, they do a wonderful job with helping our customers, our readers, get these books in the UK because they sell them also on eBay. So they always do a great job with that.
Awesome,
brilliant.
And where can people find you, like on Twitter or on social media and stuff? Because you're announcing news all the time, aren't you, on there?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Peter Cimetti, and then also at Alterna Comics. So it's nice and easy. I don't have the very, very creative and forgettable Twitter name some people have.
No, but folks, go and follow him and check out the comics and just show Alterna some love, because they're as we've described here, they're fighting the good fight. So
definitely.
And yeah, so thank you very much for joining us, Pete. It's been absolutely awesome. You're welcome. And
thank you for having me on.
We'll get you back in the future. You know, probably definitely. when you've got 250 comics. We've got. I mean, you probably have that in about 2 weeks, and the way you publish them. But you're definitely welcome back anytime.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you guys for reading as well and keeping up with Alterna. It means a lot.
So there you go, folks.
That was a great interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
Like I say, I mean, I'm a recent convert to Alterna. I've been aware of them for a long time. Mm. You know, I must say I wasn't completely aware that they were going for so long and doing so well. So that
I wasn't either, actually.
No,
yeah.
They seem to explode on social media recently, and yeah. I say recently, in the last year or so, I sort of caught my awareness. But the way Peter tackles the business, seems very kind of very interesting.
Yeah,
and you didn't mention the fact that you were in one of their books, Dan, which I thought you were going to.
Didn't I? I apologize. Me and Michael Phoenix, we did a piece for the If anthology. The horror anthology, which should be out in the next couple of weeks, I think by the end of January.
Brilliant. Should be getting a copy of that.
Yeah, 4-page. It's called Beyond Redemption. It's a nice little piece.
And that's interesting. While we were talking to him, he mentioned that there's some United Kingdom comic shops that stock their stuff. So I pulled the list up, and there's a few that were pals of ours, actually. So OK Comics, the Incredible Comic Shop in Swindon, they get their books. Destination Venus, who've been on the show, they're good people.
Yeah,
Raygun Comics in Richmond, Spartan Comics. It's Dan Mallier's job thing, isn't it? Yeah. Page 45. They've been very kind about the podcast in the past. Comic Book Guys. There's a few. If you go to the Alterna website, there's a list. Unfortunately, Gosh and Orbital aren't on there, which I was a bit surprised about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I might need to speak to them about that. There you go.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice.
Can I do a shout out to the 2000 AD Art Comp?
Yeah.
Of course you can, Dan.
Because I submitted a piece of work to their 3-month character highlight thing, and this week, this quarter, whatever, was Rogue Trooper. So I submitted it a couple of weeks ago, and I've been sort of going on.
We've all been watching it.
And it's popped up today, and I was like, yes, I was on the podcast, but unfortunately, they've not used my correct Instagram handle, so. I'm not getting any of those sweet likes or follows. With one hand he giveth, the other take it away.
I've got a couple of shout-outs. So firstly, happy birthday to the Gibster, who's our pal. We haven't seen him at a con this year, have we? So hopefully catch up with him soon. But happy birthday. It's today, the Sunday. And also on Kickstarter at the moment is the Gallant and Amos trade, which collects the first 4 issues put out by Little Heroes and Fair Spark Books, all for a good charity cause. They're just over halfway through, I think, halfway over their amount, halfway to their amount. Go over to look up Gallant and Amos, GALLANT and Amos, AMOS, on Kickstarter, you'll find it. And as of this morning, I've written the introduction for it, which I'm quite pleased with. So it's amazing. A cracking all ages book. So yeah. Get on it. And
I pledge for the trade myself. And,
Good man.
Yeah,
nice
and, I mean, I've no, got that's... I bought issue one, and it's fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, if you're someone that it reminds me of, like the classic asterisks. Yeah.
I made that comparison in the intro. Actually, yeah. Enough, mate. Yeah. It really does, doesn't it?
And
yeah,
how many people got their start in like loving comics due to books like that they saw in their school library and stuff? So if you like that, and you know, it's great for your kids, I think as well. It's brilliant stuff.
So a little shout out to Rob Barnes, who's the creator. He's a bit of a one man army on that one. And he keeps pumping out issues. Four came out in quick succession. Nice to see.
Yeah, it's awesome cool. stuff.
Mike, once you got any V.
No, I care about
I've
nothing.
I've got one more.
Oh, yeah. But Dan, you know, what's wrong? What's happened to you this week, Dan?
Who are you?
I appeared on another podcast. It's not gone live
yet. Oh, yeah.
It's Comics of the Apocalypse. The first episode should be up when you're listening to this with our good friend Sarah Milman.
Yep.
And I'll be on the one after that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, I'm looking forward to this. Yeah, that's looks really good. That's with...
Samuel George London.
Yeah.
Career. Yeah. Are they not going to call it Vanguard Unchained? That's what I want to call a podcast one day.
Oh, yeah.
Butcher Unchained.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Surely if he had his own show, it'd be like Butcher's Row or something like that, surely. Or the Butcher's Block.
Yeah.
Where he just goes on and just like really just lays into whatever he feels.
And at the end,
like.
You get someone to put their head on the Butcher's Block and then he just fucking goes for them.
Yeah.
I've been trying to kind of chill out like more recently, but I found in the last couple of weeks.
Hang on, when did this start, Dan?
My anger's been like just bubbling underneath the surface. Burst out.
Yeah.
So, gotta be careful.
Yep.
Don't anger him. You won't like him when he's angry.
I don't like me when I'm angry, so
yeah.
We don't like him when he's angry.
I quite like him when he's angry.
Yeah.
Don't make him angry at True Believers though, Tony.
I'll make him happy when I'm in my pants at the table. Sorry, night shorts.
Yeah. So is that when all the table and chairs suddenly like get knocked over and pushed backwards and everyone flees?
Every time you say night shorts, I feel like someone should just burst in the room with a saxophone. It's like a saxophone solo.
Look, we're going to go back to talking about lava lamps if you're not careful.
We're here to talk about comics as always. So after that great interview, we got a couple of little recommendations for you. Dan, I think it's only fair that your one should go first, judging by this week's.
Yes, I read a load of alternate titles this week in prep. For prep, rare thing we do for guests. this show, and it was Mother Russia by Jeff McComsky, which was absolutely great. Loved it.
Yeah, it's really good.
An interesting one. Let me just get to the thing. It's 17 plus action horror, one baby, one rifle, 2 million zombies. As a zombie apocalypse breaks out in WW2, a Soviet sniper risks her life to protect an innocent baby boy. And it's great. It reads, it's so fast, fluid, smooth. It's got enough detail to kind of absolutely sell where it is and what it's doing. I've really enjoyed it. It's,
We were talking about this before we came on, weren't we? And I was saying that one of the things I really like about it is a silent opening. Sometimes you get it becomes overly talky straight away, and this doesn't. Yeah. It's we won't ruin it because it goes much beyond this. But it's a sniper at the top of a tower, with like a million cans of beans and sort of and a load of water and just surviving. And all the way all downstairs at the basement of this tower are zombies, and you just get pop, pop as she's firing, like just killing zombies one at a time. You know, really good stuff.
I mean, you don't need a big intro. There's no kind of narrative balloons. It's just.
Yeah,
it's what it is. You're kind of thrown in the situation. It's relatively simple setup, but you work that out as the reader, engage it as it goes on yourself. It reminds me of the first trade of Walking Dead. A little, I can't remember the name of the artist. Was it Tony Moore?
Tony Moore. Yeah.
That kind of style, which I really like.
It's a cross between sort of actual, genuine sort of I don't know, it's physicality, but it's also got like a caricature element to it as well. Especially when the other officers appear, you see there's a caricature to them, isn't there?
I do really like that kind of slight caricature, cartoony rubberiness that you
like Greg Hinkle does that when he did Airboy as well.
And Ryan Ottley, which is current my heartthrob. I really loved it. I'm going to put myself down for the trade on that one.
Yeah,
because I was planning on reading a load of first issues of Alternate, and I sat waiting for a meeting. I had about an hour to wait for this meeting, and I read the first one of that, and I thought, I'm just going to read the next one. And then I just read all three, just kept buying them on Comixology on the MyFi, you know?
Yeah.
And it is, they're crackers, and they're only 69p each. So
it's ridiculously good price. I mean, I love, I mean, I browse the independent section of Comixology, you know, more than the mainstream. I always like the Wednesday, I always check out the new titles, but I specifically make a beeline to see, you know, to actually go to the to browse the independent section as well.
Yeah.
Because you see titles that don't that aren't always there, you know, in that big list, you know, and that's certainly where I got one that I'm going to talk about in a minute.
Is that the one you sent us a picture of that I said I read as well?
No, I didn't.
No, I was hoping you were going to do that one.
No, no, I need to make notes on that if I'm going to talk about that. I don't know because I have no idea how I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah, there's an element of subtext on that as well that I'm not actually certain I understand completely.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll save that for the moment.
If you want to know what we're talking about, then come to True Believers and ask us about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, Mother Russia, definitely change. I think that's a good sort of gateway drug for Alterna as well.
I think it is. Definitely. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. So obviously, I'll go next. My pick. I picked up a couple of titles on Comixology. Going back to Comixology again, and like I say, get a lot of the independent ones. I continued the latest issue of Outer Darkness by Image. I'm not going to talk too much about that one. That was just a brief mention because I ranted, I raved about it on Twitter, and I think that title is going to definitely go be one of my favourites of the year in terms of the series. Nice. I mean, it's basically Star Trek but with horror and exorcists and stuff.
Oh
like
yeah,
that
one. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, sorry.
And
yeah.
Just you know, the third issue came out last week. I absolutely just flew through it and just thought, yes, more of this please. It's a great title that seems like the universe is expanding with every issue, but I don't want to say too much about it because I know some of our listeners are reading it and haven't necessarily read the latest issue yet. So
I was going to say, a quick aside, we've got to get back to doing the Wednesday New Comic Book Day cover.
I was taking screenshots of the covers, but I just didn't get around to posting them.
We'll try and get back to that this week.
There's been some good covers. I mean, the first couple of weeks are usually fairly dry in terms of comics releases, isn't it, really, as the year gets going. But, there are some great covers already. But, yeah, the one I was just going to talk about quickly is a book called Incredible Doom. I found on the independent section of Comixology. There's been several issues of it. I think it's a four-issue series. Now, it came out in 2017. And I think I picked up the issues, I think for about 69p or a pound or something like that. It's by Matthew Bogart and Jesse J. Holden. Each issue is about 41 pages. And it's basically, issue one is called The World of Tomorrow. It's 1991. Alison is trapped with her domineering father, a stage magician who won't let her out of his sight. Everything changes when he unexpectedly brings home their family's first computer and Alison begins to see a way out. This was a really pleasant surprise. I was sort of drawn in by the cover at first. It's a very sort of it's just a stark sort. It just says Incredible Doom, and then like you see this padlock with a chain in a circle, which immediately just caught my eye. So, and thanks to like, you know, digital services and stuff, you can see previews of the pages, and the artwork is a lovely sort of. It reminds me, we've seen books with a similar sort of style before, where it's sort of black and white, but everything's also in like. Tones of blue, you know, it's a lovely sort of duotone sort of book. And at first I thought, oh, maybe this is going to be slightly autobiographical, you know, it's very much a sort of slow character piece. But then I found when the book ended, I was like, oh, there's going to be an issue two of this. And I found myself really pleased about that because I had inadvertently been drawn into these characters and their daily lives and stuff. And Alison is, you know, she's essentially a magician's assistant, and her dad's, well, I won't beat around the bush, he's a prick. and obviously, you know, she has a home life isn't that great. But then when he brings back the first computer and he expects her to set it up and, like, you know, expect it to do everything for him, And then when it doesn't, he goes, this is shit, and just locks it away in a room and tells her that she's not allowed to sort of touch it. She obviously sneaks into the room and hooks up the internet. And this is 1991, you know, in the very early days of being online. So, and it was very interesting sort of reading that, you know, that the sort of there's an online messenger that she has. She sort of makes a pen friend, as it were. And as they get closer, as the issue goes on, she wonders what he looks like. And there's this wonderful, there's this wonderful page where she's sort of looking around the house, making sure that, you know, no one's listening. And then you just hear this, and she's running to a printer, which is one of those old school printers, you know, where there's sort of the reams of sort of like sort of numerical paper or whatever. And it's just printed out, you said you wanted a picture of me, here you go. And it's all done in like dashes and like parentheses and all of that. But at the same time, like, she has problems with her father. He continues to have pain. And then by the end of it, she's going to meet this character that she met face to face. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, where's this story go from here? I think the second issue is going to concentrate on his side of the story. I do not know why it's called Incredible Doom. But this,
it reminds
this...
me of the time I got catfished.
That was the Incredible Boom.
Oh, yeah.
But no, this was it's a really pleasant find. It came about when I had a bunch of books on my phone to read while I was waiting to get my hair cut this weekend. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like you say, it's whether you're travelling or you're you know, waiting rooms are forever changed now that we've got smartphones. Because you know, long gone are the days where you sat there just thinking, I'm so bored. Now I'm like, brilliant. Brilliant. I can read about 3 or 4 issues of something now. So
I do the same waiting for my car to get fixed this week. I read Trespasser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's almost good to have those moments, isn't it, where you think, oh, brilliant, I've downloaded that onto my phone. I can now get into it. So, yeah, Incredible Doom. I think it's worth checking out for a lot of our listeners as well. I think it's an American creator, I believe. But I'll definitely find out more about him because the art style's lovely as well. So, we'll put a link in the show notes to find out more. But, I'm going to download the rest of the issues and see how the story plays out. So, great.
Okay.
Cool. Over to you, Tony.
Right, I'm going to start this by saying I wish I spoke Italian. That's my current thing. Because I've got like a stack of Dylan Dogs that are just absolutely gorgeous. And I just wish I could speak or read Italian because they're just incredible. A number of which were sent to me by Marrow and a number of which I bought on my visits to Italy. And it is an incredible comic series. But luckily, Dylan Dog, Chess of Death, is a book that I bought in Orbital this week. And it's produced by Epicenter Comics. And it's a translation. Dylan Dog was created by... No, I'm fucked now because these are words I'm not going to say well. created by Tiziano Sclavi. The story is by Claudio Chiaverotti, and the artwork is by Corrado Roy. Cover artwork, I think there's two different covers. They put out two different covers of these books, which is interesting. One is by Well B, and one is by Marco Mastrazzo. It's a translation, a coloured translation of a sort of double, I think it's almost a double Dylan Dog story, Chess of Death. Epicenter Comics are a very small outfit out of San Diego. It's 102 pages, full colour. The back blurb is, it's impossible to win a match with death, but some will still try. So nice. the story goes, a dying man tries to avoid death by challenging death to a game of chess. So it's the classic sort of hooded skeleton, you know, with a scythe type thing. But with this sort of really clever twist on it. So for every piece he loses, he has to name someone who's a loved one who will then die.
Ouch.
Oh,
so that's
Christ.
Quite interesting. That's the sort of takes it one step further, isn't it? And for example, he loses a knight at one point, and his business partner has his head bitten off by a sort of skeleton dinosaur. So who is contacted to investigate it? It's Dylan Dog. If for those who don't know about Dylan Dog, he's a fucking revelation in Italy. He's been running for over 30 years now. It's kind of like a horror comic series. Created in 1986, I suppose the nearest thing we would actually have to it is probably Hellblazer.
Yeah, I was about to say Constantine. Yeah, Constantine would be
a place, there's similarities. There are certain similarities. I'm not saying it's a copy, not at all, but and it's actually based in London, which is really interesting. So you get a lot of, like, you know, I'm just reading one at the moment, and it's got, or trying to read one, and it's got Buckingham Palace and the guards at Buckingham Palace getting beheaded and stuff like that. The inspiration for Dylan Dog's look was Rupert Everett after the creator saw him in Another Country, which is a movie in the 80s.
And that's quite interesting, because didn't...
Yeah. It is. Exactly, yeah.
He went Cemetery on to play Man, him. Wasn't it?
Yeah, he went on to play him in the first sort of Dylan Dog movie, inspired movie, which is called... It had a number of names. Delamorte Delamore, or a.k.a. The Cemetery Man, a.k.a. Of Death and Love. So, and we all know who played him in the second movie.
Oh, that was Brandon Routh.
It was. How many superhero or comic characters Brandon Routh played at this point?
I know.
God, yeah.
Quite a few. Yeah. According to that fan of all knowledge, the internet, this comic sells 120,000 copies a month.
Wow.
In Italy alone, or, you know, and obviously imported, exported type stuff, but only tech sells better. And in the 90s, it was selling a million a month at one point.
Wow.
He's kind of like, imagine if David Bowie was an occult detective who's a bit rubbish on occasion. It's real sort of anti-establishment. It's got a little bit of a punk edge to it, and it is a lot of surreal. He wears the same clothes, you know, in the same way that Constantine is always kind of in the same clothes, you know, the sort of tie, white shirt sort of thing going on. He's always got a black jacket, jeans, and a bright red shirt on. He drives a white VW Beetle with a black vinyl roof on it, which is pretty cool. That's kind of like his trademark. And in the here's another interesting twist to it. In the Italian versions of this book, his assistant is essentially Groucho Marx, and has the moustache and the cigar and the eyebrows, and is called Groucho. But because of some, I'm not even sure if this is still a thing, but unfortunately, because of some legal issues with Marx's estate, in the English language one, they have to remove his moustache and call him Felix.
Really?
That's a bit strange, isn't it?
Yeah,
really strange. I can't imagine. I love the Marx Brothers, but I can't imagine they're a big litigious company that, you know, will go after you know, a small comics company. But there you go. It's got that really great premise. The art really reminds me of do you know Button Man by Arthur Ransom?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know that sort of ghostly, sort of bleak, sort of haunting sort of artwork. The dialogue, and I don't know whether this is due to translation, but his dialogue and his actions are also a little bit off kilter compared to sort of UK and US comics. There's a woman who if a woman phones him at one point, and says to him, asks him if he's seen the news, and he says, "Are you joking? Pay money to hear the world's horrors." He also sort of shouts a lot of "Dancing Judas." This is like little phrase that, you know, like Great Krypton or something like that. Do you know what people shout out? There's one bit that made me laugh. This is typical. I don't want to say this is typical Italian, but this is typical European comics compared to our sort of stuck up Brits and Americans. But on page 49, this woman, I think she's going to be the next victim. She comes in and she says, "Dylan, I'm afraid." And that's in like the last panel on page 49. And on page 50, he's eating her out. Immediately,
my God.
Foreplay, just zero foreplay, just down to it. Now at that point, I realised that these were comics I needed to read.
You
know? Oh, God. Yeah. So it's kind of a bit like if Bill and Ted crossed over with New Age French New Wave cinema with more oral, you know. it's published by Epicenter Comics, www.epicentercomics.com, at Epicenter Comics on Twitter. I got mine at Orbital. They stock it, and they put the trades up in the new trade section, which is on the right as you go in the shop. I don't think Dylan Dog's on Comixology. It's such a shame. I would go nuts. I mean, there's been very few comics brought out about him. I think Dark Horse brought out, I suppose, like a kind of a mini series of comics that they collected into a big sort of phone directory kind of chunk of a trade, which is actually quite hard to get hold of. But there's some. I would say that people who are fans of like the Mignolaverse or something like that, I would say would really love this stuff as well.
Yeah.
And Mignola drew some of the covers actually for the Dark Horse releases. It's published by Bonelli Publishers in Italy. If you can find any Dylan Dog and it's translated, or if you just want to look at some like great black and white artwork in the Italian little volumes, they're like kind of slightly larger than digest kind of volumes. But you know, they're 100 pages each, you know, they're great.
Yeah.
We just, why are we not translating them? I don't know, but there you go. That's the comics industry for you. But this one is particularly good. There's a series, I've got another one called Master, sort of Mater Dolorosa, which is another one from the same series from Epicenter. But this one, I would say, is a great starter called Chest of Death. And it also includes the covers for the original Italian releases. Yeah, great stuff. Nice. There you go.
Nice.
Fine.
Nice.
Well, the show notes are going to be busting with loads of titles that you're going to have to check out this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and thank you once again to our guest Peter Cimetti for joining us. And it was good to get another side to the comics publishing world that we haven't had before. So we always try to do that with our episodes. Try and you don't want the same stuff over and over all the time, do you?
No.
So
the comics world is so broad. There's so much going on. Do you know what I mean? We got to try and definitely.
So and there's plenty more of that to come. With our future guests, but we're so we hope excited. You enjoyed. Yeah, very well. We're all hugely excited. Well, I'm not going to make any more noises. That's a bit weird, isn't it? But we hope you enjoyed this episode. And if there's anything you want to discuss with us, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any books or events, or you know, if your comic store stocks Alterna, for instance, and isn't on the list, let us know and we will put the word out there. So you follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, which is going to be more active in 2019 than it has been before, especially with some of the exciting news we've got coming up. We'll probably be shamelessly plugging our comic for the next 6 months as well. So at The Awesome Pod, follow us there. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to talk comics on Facebook, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk. There's a great community there that basically we started the page and then we just let everyone else do it, and it's becoming an amazing group. So thank you to everyone that gets involved on there and talks comics. So there's some interesting topics there, even one about other comics podcasts you should listen to, which we approved because that's how magnanimous we are.
We did, didn't we?
We're well grown up, but you have to love us more than anyone else. That's the only thing we demand. And well, you put up with us every week, God bless you.
Well, if you're listening to this, you definitely do.
And whether you listen to us on the website awesomecomic.podbean.com, maybe you listen to it on iTunes. If you did, subscribe, leave a review, help get the word out. And thank you whether you listen to us on any kind of networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
The famous one, Pod Mouth Congress.
I'm not going to take that any further. So these are only going to get worse, aren't they?
Yep.
All right. I want someone out there to make a note of everyone he does this year.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We need a graph of how grotty they get as the year goes on. But where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's, I think, 4 gone up this week, actually, because I'm doing like a preview thing for Troops, which we're very much looking forward to. And there's a thing gone up about Mr. Prolix today, which I give a sort of fake history of how we met, which did amuse us.
It's not fake, it's real.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, some people did think it was.
Amazing.
So I did not meet him in a pub in 1981, but there you go.
Yeah.
People think I'm old.
What about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
And where can they find you on Instagram?
It's Dan_VanguardComic. So, check out that Rogue Trooper piece. See what we think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks great, mate. Yeah,
thank you.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, and find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. Thank you very much for listening to our first guest show of the year. It is, isn't it? Already my mind's a blur.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It's a great one to start off with. So here's to loads more. So thank you again to Peter, and from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. Support your local comic shop. And as always, stay awesome. Yes. We're going to be a chorus eventually, Tony. Do you hear that? Me and Dan did it at the same time.
Oh, we fuck.
You'll do it.
I'll do it for money.
You're a pensioner now.
I'm your private dancer.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Are we human or are we dancer?
Oh, Oh, yeah. Dan, you disgust me. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
We're all nice and clear. Someone said to me, "Oh, sometimes it's hard to hear you talk." So I went out and fucking bought a microphone and
Just shouted in their face.
Now people can, just smash them over the head with a box.
Go, okay, for it. Yeah, yeah. Did he just laugh as he walked off? He's a beast.
He's a maniac.